record? Is it working? All right, that was so weird. My OBS crashed. It wasn't my internet didn't go out. My OBS crashed. I have no idea. Maybe playing that game used up too much resources, or I don't know. My computer just had a hiccup. But my OBS got an error message and crashed. So the stream went down. The recording ended. My OBS literally shit the bed, which has never happened before. So anyway, sorry about that. Let me replay. I don't think I missed too much. I think it's just the last super chat. Let me just play that again. So sorry about that, everyone.
"20th Century Rebellion Man donated $5. Damn, feels like it's been half a year since I last posted. So questions that cover multitudes of incidents. 1. The Luigi show walk. What was the point of doing this? They could have done that to the guy that choked out the black guy in the subway. 2. Do you think the globalists will stab the Zionist in the back because they allowed Trump to win? 3. Why was the media highlighting so much of Jimmy Carter? Was worse prey during the Great Depression?"
Okay, so the perp walk, look, he killed a billionaire. So the billionaires want him to, you know, they're charging him with terrorism, you know, like they're basically overcharging him. They're doing a little perp walk. They're trying to do something, but it's just making him more popular. Like, everyone loves him. So if the billionaires think that, like, they're going to make an example out of him, they're making him like a symbol rather than an example. So that's probably going to backfire. The globalists have tried to, because the globalists are kind of anti-Israel, like, because again, they're pro-Arab, pro-Palestinian, they believe all that stuff, and they've gotten blown the fuck out. So like, betray the Zionists, like, how? They've tried to go against the Zionists, and they lose every time. So basically the Zionists tolerate the globalists because their interests are mostly aligned. But if you go against Israel, the Zionists will slap you down. So, you know, and again, you see this with Jews themselves. You know, Jews are all about open borders, except for Israel. You know, they're all about flooding, you know, white countries with immigrants and replacing them, demographically, but not for Israel. So, you know, it's just everyone's conservative about the thing they actually care about. And the whole Jimmy Carter thing, there's a saying that people only care, when you're dead. Or I guess if you're beautiful or you're dead, that's when people care. So no one cares about Jimmy Carter, but he died. So now everyone had to say something nice about him. And, you know, whatever, who gives a shit? All right.
Avrix donated $5. "What are your thoughts on the Brew Party that Andrew Tate is planning to start? Does he have a shoot at becoming the British Prime? Also, when it comes to mentally surviving the collapse while watching movies about war or reading books, etc., help to obtain the mind to survive? Also, can the will to survive help awaken the true power of the mind to overcome adversity when shit hits the fan and maybe bugging out into a national park?"
All right, so I know that you're like obsessed with superheroes and movies, but no, you're like, mental resilience is a discipline. It's not something you can get by reading a comic book. You're probably better off learning philosophy rather than watching movies when it comes to mental resilience. Like stoicism, that kind of stuff will help you more than, you know, watching war movies. As far as Andrew Tate, it's a fucking joke. I remember back in the day, you had like Hulk Hogan running for president, and it was a joke. So Andrew Tate running for prime minister is a joke. The Bruv Party, it's a stupid word. It means like, you know, it's how people say brother with a Cockney accent. And so it's clearly a joke. Anyone who thinks this is legitimate and Andrew Tate is going to actually like run for anything and try to get, you know, try to canvass votes and, you know, you're stupid. This is just him, you know, fishing for attention. trying to be relevant. That's all. All right.
"20th Century Rebellion Man donated $5. It was really sweet. One donation gave you $1,000 for you to go carnivore diet. How is that going? Regarding the drone thing. Isn't it fascinating how that dropped so fast? Was that just to stir attention from when Biden administration was doing with Israel versus Hezbollah or the Ukraine war? Then there's that OnlyFans girl that fucked 100 guys in 12 hours. Honestly, that alone is an advertisement to go full doll or legalize escorts."
Well, and people are like trying to turn her into a victim. Like, she chose to let 100 guys fuck her. And, you know, people are like, "Oh, you shouldn't use her. Oh, she's such a victim." Like, she did it to herself. Nobody forced her to do it. She did something stupid, and now she's famous for doing something stupid, and she's not a victim. Anyway, the carnivore diet's actually doing great. So, I had one flare-up a couple weeks ago. I talked about it last week. It only lasted a day or two, and it went away. I haven't had a flare-up since. In fact, like my, when the inflammation clears up, you have like certain phases. So right when the inflammation clears up, your joints are very tingly and your muscles are sore. Like it feels like you just got back from the gym and you worked too hard. But then once that soreness and tingliness goes away, then you're fine. Everything's 100%. So my knees are fine. My hands are fine. My shoulders are the last thing. The arthritis in my shoulders was really bad. Like I couldn't sleep. I couldn't lay down. And it looks like the inflammation's gone away, but my shoulders are really hurt. Like it feels like I did like deadlifts and like tore something. Like my shoulders hurt. I had to I had to rub Tiger Balm on my shoulders because the pain. But I know this is just like my shoulders are like they've been the worst throughout this whole experience. So this is just like a phase. Now that the inflammation is going away, now the shoulder needs to repair itself, and then I should be back. And honestly, like I thought I was gonna get really sick of eating steak all day. It's not that bad. Like, I mean, steak is delicious, and it's fine. It's basically like it's like keto, except you don't eat carbs at all. Like with keto, you just had to like, you know, you could have some carb, but you had to like remove the fiber and worry about net carbs and eat mostly meat. But you could still have some salad and some whatever. You know, just eating steak, it's fine. And it's satisfying. And as far as like the weird diarrhea you get, yeah, for like 2 or 3 days, I had like really bad diarrhea. It's fine now. And I didn't do anything. It's just like your body gets used to it. Your body gets used to... And I went in ketosis immediately. Because my body knew what was up. I've been doing keto off and on for years. So starting the carnivore diet was just like doing keto. It's basically it's just a more strict keto. Except, here's the difference. This is why I think there is something to this red meat beef thing. Because all the years I've been doing keto, I've been mostly eating pork because pork is cheap. A lot of bacon, pork chops, you know, like just stuff like that because, you know, pork is cheaper than beef. So I would always eat pork. And I would get really sick of pork. I'd be really sick of, you know, chicken, all the cheap meat. And that's why I would like need a cheat day because just eating bacon and eggs and whatever would just get really tiresome. I'm not getting sick of steak at all. Like eating steak every day is fine. I look forward to it. I don't know. Maybe there's something about red meat. Like red meat satisfies you in ways that pork or chicken kind of like you will get sick of eating pork and chicken every day. But I'm not sick of eating steak every day. I mean, I'm actually, my mouth's starting to water because I kind of want to eat a steak right now. And I've been eating nothing but steak for almost a month. And I'm still like craving steak. And I'm not even craving anything else. You know, like I don't want pork or chicken or anything. I'm just like, I really want to cook myself up another steak. In fact, one thing I'm running into is my seasoning is all caked, you know, like, because you don't want to get the seasoning that has the anti-caking chemicals in it, because, you know, you want to eat organically. So a lot of my seasonings, they've like turned into bricks of like solid, like they're no longer powder. So I bought a and I'll make a video about this when my journey is over. I bought a coffee grinder that's a mason jar lid. And I just take my seasoning that's all, you know, turned into turned into pellets, and I just grind it into powder again. It's good as new. So, yeah, I got some seasonings, and delicious steak is just, you know, good. And especially now that I found that one cut of beef, the butt cheek meat, that's good steak. You just have to tenderize it, put some salt on it, but I mean, coarse salt is like $3 at Costco. The tenderizer, I think I paid $15. And the steaks were $24 for like a butt cheek. And I got two of them for $50. And that was like a whole thing. And I found that like one thing a steak. So usually I pay about $30 for like a roll, and I cut it into steaks. And that usually lasts me 4 days. But the thing about the round steaks is I'd have to eat two small steaks for a meal. With the butt cheek steaks, I can cut like a huge steak. That's all I need, just that steak. It's like a nice full-size steak. Like, you could serve that at a restaurant. People wouldn't even complain. They wouldn't even guess that it was only $2.50 a pound. Anyway, the drone thing was weird. Everyone's like, oh, the drones. Now, what I've heard was there was an FAA... bill, like a renewal of these like police powers that we've given the government, and so they basically staged this whole drone bullshit to scare the public into extending these like FAA rules to give them the power to spy on you. That's what I heard. I couldn't give less of a shit. It's like, there's certain things I care about when it comes to the news. When it comes to just them doing an obvious psyop to try to get some law passed, I'm like, this is fucking such a waste of my time. I'm not going to give it any more brain power than that. Let's see. I think that's it. Yep. Okay. We covered that. All right. Moving on. Sorry. When people ask me multi-part questions, I have to make sure I hit everything.
Avrix donated $5. America should take over Moldova. Ha 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 ha. Anyway, should Trump leave NATO, would Europe invade America in an act of revenge? What are your military thoughts on China's sixth generation plan, and will it defeat the F-35 in a drawn-out dogfight? Also, why is the American military a naval and aerial superpower? I thought in the 20th century they would change and refurbish their power. Do those in power not learn from history? Also, why don't they pay a good wage towards servicemen?
Well, okay, so there's a lot of questions. Holy shit. All right. Yeah, the Moldova thing seems to have died. They're fucking with Transnistria by cutting off their power, but I think the idea of ginning up a war has fallen by the wayside. So if Trump leaves NATO, NATO will simply cease to exist.
I'll let you know what happens once the parliamentary elections happen.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
they should be happening next year.
Nice. Anyway, if America leaves NATO, NATO ceases to exist. Because the whole point of NATO is, if you go to war with one of us, America will go to war with you. And America is this invincible superpower. And that's why you don't want to go to war with us, because you have to go to war with America, and you don't want that. Well, if America leaves, what's the threat? Oh, if you go to war with Poland, you're going to have to go to war with France and the Great Britain. Like, who gives a shit? No one's afraid of those countries. So NATO will cease to exist if Trump leaves NATO. It will just poof, gone. As far as the Chinese sixth generation air, the problem with the Chinese military is they don't do anything. So, you know, they might show off their new sixth generation fighter jet, but what is it going to do? Are they going to give it to Russia to test out in Ukraine? I mean, they should. China should absolutely give Russia their jets or send Chinese jets. Like, hey, we want to test out our jet against the Ukrainian air defenses or something, you know? But they're not going to. So it's like, you know, it could be cool. It could be CGI. It may not even exist. Who knows? The Chinese military is like hypothetical because you never see them do anything. So it's like, you know, if an empire never expands or does anything, you know, what do you say? It could do something. Who knows? But if America ever tries to push the whole shit with Taiwan, yeah, you know, China's gonna fuck some shit up. Okay, so why is America a naval and you know, aerial superpower and not a land army? Well, it's because United States is in North America, and all the wars we fight are not in North America. So we have to cross the ocean to get to our enemies. When it comes, I mean, think about World War I, World War II, Vietnam. None of these wars were, we haven't fought a war in the Americas since like the 1800s, maybe the 1700s. You know, we fought Mexico or, you know, the Spanish Empire. We don't fight wars in on our own continent. So we basically have to be a maritime and air power army because our enemies are on the other side of the world. And now, why don't they pay servicemen more? Well, it's because of benefits. So, yeah, the pay is dog shit, but they give you free housing, free food, free healthcare, blah, 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 blah. If you were to monetize all of that, they actually get paid pretty well. It's just that, you know, you basically, now you don't get a choice. You have to live on, but you have to live in berthing, you have to eat at the DFAC, but you know, but it's still a benefit. You know, that like in lieu of payment, you get like health care and you know, free place to live and free food, that kind of stuff. They even give you a stipend for your uniforms. Every year you get a bonus in your check to buy uniforms. So you don't even have to pay for your clothes. All right.
Avrix donated $5. TFM, what is the best way to learn and obtain knowledge? Can one obtain a way to acquire the skills necessary to become the best version you can be? I want the most optimal way to obtain the skills to survive and maybe pass it on if they work.
All right, so this, you know, here's the problem is the best way to learn is to do. So like obviously reading and learning, watching tutorials, those are all good things, but the best way to obtain, you know, any type of skill is to get out there and start doing it. Like especially as a man. So women can memorize things and repeat them. Men tend to learn by doing. Men learn by applying. You don't want to just kind of willy-nilly, just, you know, fucking experiment on the fly, but you know, once you've read something, you want to apply it. That's how it's gonna stick. It's gonna stick if you've applied it and if you've practiced it and if you've done it in the real world. If you just read it and then you've moved on to learn the next thing, you're gonna forget it. You're not, you know. So first of all, when you're talking about obtaining knowledge, like you could learn random bullshit facts. That's not gonna help you. I think what you want is you want skills. So, for example, let's say you want to learn bushcraft or survival skills. So you want to learn how to build a shelter or start a fire with no matches or you know, whatever. So you could read a book that could tell you how to do that, but you're not going to remember, and you're probably not going to have your book with you when you need to, and you're not going to do it. So what you need to do is take your book and then go do it. Go pitch a tent. Go start a fire. Go, you know, do forage for berries. Practice the things that you're learning in these books, and then it will stick. So this applies to any skill. Like, learn the basics. Don't just go in blind. Read the instructions, but then start doing it. Don't be mad at yourself if you make a mistake. You know, mistakes are part of the process. You know, you keep failing, you keep getting better after each failure until you got it. And that's how you. And think of it like a video game. You know, you fight a boss, you don't know what their weaknesses are, you don't know what their patterns are, you're going to die. And then you play again. And then it's slowly, and you learn their patterns, you learn what to watch for, what the tells are, and you eventually beat the boss. That's how you acquire knowledge. So, but again, I'm not telling you to go in blind and just wing it. You know, watch tutorials, read books, but make sure you apply and practice in the real world. Otherwise, it's going to go in one ear and out the other. And that applies to everything. That's why, like, in school, usually you learn something and then they give you an assignment where you have to use the thing you've just learned. That's why they do. That's why homework is a thing. Because if you don't do something to reinforce it, you'll forget it. And look, and I hate homework. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad I'm not a kid anymore and I don't have to do that shit.
"20th Century Rebellion Man donated $5. You might have already made your thoughts on the California fires, but I'm just tuning in. Do you think Gavin Newsom is trying to follow the same strategy Hawaii did to their residents in Maui by burning the entire land to buy it to a corporation? I don't see how that possibly can go nicely. I watched on Patreon Channel 5 Andrew Callahan interview people on their homes lost. Real tear jerk. I don't see how this will help Gavin be president in 2028.
Yeah, people are already saying that, like, Gavin Newsom's done because of this fire. And here's the problem. When it came to the Maui people, so that was a very expensive island, and they were basically forcing out the natives who didn't want to sell their land to a corporation to develop it into, like, resorts. And so when the neighborhood burned down, they were forced out, and then their land got bought. The Palisades are like mansions. These weren't poor people who wouldn't sell to a developer. These were millionaires. They're the shareholders in the company. So this was not some type of... There is no 3D chess. There is no conspiracy. It looks like it was arson. It looks like somebody just started a fire that got out of control. And, you know, all these people's fucking houses are gone. So, but this wasn't like some big thing. If this was like a poor neighborhood that burned down, I'd look into it a little deeper. But these were like mansions. This was like one of the most expensive neighborhoods in LA. All these people were millionaires, and now, you know, their fucking shit's gone. So, I get, you know, everything burns. You can't take it with you. It is what it is. But yeah, I don't think there's any kind of deeper. The only conspiracy was, you know, the mayor cut the budget of the fire department and they drained the reservoir, you know, because they're fucking incompetent lesbians. But that's the only scandal. It wasn't like some premeditated act. It's basically just incompetence. Somebody started a fire and then the fire department had no fucking water because the government's retarded. That's what happened. And yeah, Gavin Newsom, he's probably done, but we'll see. Who knows?
Ronker donated $5. You gotta get into braising for cheap large cuts TFM. You just season it and refrigerate overnight. Then you lightly brown some onions and make a simply braising liquid like a can of tomatoes and some beer/wine. There is simple recipes everywhere. Then you place your meat into the liquid and just add water till it's halfway up whatever meat you have and slap it in the oven to simmer for like 4 hours and you have restaurant quality tender as meat for weeks. Best life hack.
All right, so here's the thing. When you're doing carnivore, you can't, like, I'm intentionally avoiding, I'm just like steak and butter. Now I am seasoning my steak, but I'm avoiding sauces. I'm avoiding anything that, like, isn't meat and butter. You know, basically, if it's not meat and butter, it's not on the carnivore diet. So yeah, people are telling me to do sous-vide, which is like, it's ridiculous. So what you do is you put the steak in like a vacuum sealer and you seal it in plastic, and then you put it in like hot water for like hours, and it cooks from the hot water over the plastic and cooks the meat. And it's like, That's way too much work, and I'm not doing that shit. And the thing about the braising, you know, putting your meat over a liquid and letting the kind of the water boil off and tenderize the meat, that could work. I'm not going to do that. So I put the coarse salt. I'm kind of seasoning the, you know, I season it, put it in the fridge, and then I grill it. I grill it on my George Foreman the next day when I'm ready to eat it. It takes a few minutes. You know, this shit of, oh, you got to do this and that. And you got to put it in for 4 hours and you got to sous-vide it for 6 hours. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm not sous-viding something for 6 hours. I'm not going to braise it for 4 hours. I'm going to poke holes in it, put coarse salt on it, and then when I'm ready to eat it, I'm going to put it on a grill and I'm going to eat it in 5 minutes. All right? That's how I do. I'm not doing this 4 hour, 6 hour shit. Even if it takes, I'm sure it tastes delicious. You know what? My grilled steaks taste pretty goddamn good too. And so, pretty goddamn good in 5 minutes beats really good in 4 hours. Like, I mean, just like imagine you're horny and a beautiful woman's like, all right, I can give you the best blowjob you've ever had in 6 hours. Or you could just like fuck me over this over the bed right now. And you're like horny. What are you going to do? You're going to like come back in 6 hours for this amazing blowjob? Or are you just going to like fucking bust a nut up in that ass and call it a day and move on? You know, like sometimes you just got to you have it. And this is the thing. When I'm hungry, I want to eat. And I don't like thinking about food when I'm not hungry. I'm very much one of those people who I don't really have a set time where I prepare dinner. I just, when I'm hungry, I go eat. So if I'm hungry, I want to eat. And I want to eat in the next like 10 minutes. I don't want to start a process and then 4 hours later, then I eat. I mean, do I look like a housewife? Is it time to me prepare dinner before my husband comes home? No. I'm hungry. I go in, you know, grilling a steak in 5 minutes, super easy, something like that. That's how I roll. That's why, like when I do keto, I usually, you know, have stuff I'm either cooking very quickly or I eat a lot of salad, you know, bacon. Bacon's very easy to cook. That's what I do. I don't, these 4 hour processes, that's not me. That's like, you know where this shit comes from? Basically when women, you know, didn't have jobs, they would start dinner because they had nothing else to do. So, you know, you start dinner at like 1 p.m. That way when your husband comes home, dinner's ready and it's been cooking for 4 hours and it's super delicious and wonderful, and that's great, that's perfect. You know, if Celestina was more domesticated, maybe she could start dinner at 1 p.m. and it would be ready by dinner time. I don't know, but I got shit to do. I'm busy. I have like a 1 hour break, so I can't start shit 4 hours. Oh, I could generally, you know, I could take a bathroom break, get shit started, come back in 4 hours. I'm just not going to. And my grilled steaks are really good. Are they like the best shit ever? No, I guess. I'm sure like a braised steak tastes delicious. I'm just not going to do these multi-hour long processes. And in fact, putting the holes in the steak with the tenderizer and adding the salt, that's my limit. That's all the work I'm going to do. Like, you're lucky I didn't just carve the steak off right there and just cook it immediately without even doing anything. Like, I'm doing enough. And still, that only takes... Basically, I just cut the steak, put the holes in it, put the salt on it, put it away. It's not that much more work than just cutting the steak in the first place. Hold on, I got a cough. Let me mute my mic. All right. Sorry about that. Just, you know, I didn't want you to hear me coughing. All right.
Avericks donated $5. What is keto and how does it work to help you lose weight? What is the optimal food to obtain better brain health, and why is it that being in a hyperbolic oxy chamber can heal your wounds and stuff? Does the increase in oxygen make one smarter or not? Is it the secret to immortality?
Nothing. Look, dying is not the opposite of life. Dying is part of life. So nothing is immortal. So what keto is an epigenetic trait from our early, you know, ancestors. So back in the day before grocery stores and refrigerators, people would eat fruits and vegetables in like the spring and the fall during the harvest. But during the winter, there wasn't a lot to eat other than meat. You had to eat, like, you had to hunt during the winter because all the plants were dead and whatever. So you're eating a lot of meat in the winter. So the human body evolved to store fat and then live off that fat when the person doesn't eat enough carbs. That's what triggers the epigenetic response. When your body isn't consuming carbs, your brain thinks, oh my God, it's winter, time to live off that stored fat. And you'll start burning fat for energy rather than the carbs for energy. And this has the benefit of losing weight. You'll lose a lot of weight, just pretty effortlessly, because now you're burning fat for energy. And you simply do this by not eating carbs. So you could do this with like low carb things that have high fiber, or you could do like carnivore and just eat meat. It's up to you. You got to make sure you're getting your nutrients, though. So, I take several vitamins to make sure I'm getting the nutrients I need so that I'm not missing anything. As far as brain health, I don't know about brain health, because here's the problem. Your brain cells don't regenerate. Most of the cells in your body will replenish and renew and replace. Your brain cells don't. Your brain cells are forever. So whatever gives you mental energy or energy in general is, I guess, good for your nerve cells, but you can't really feed your nerve cells because your nerve cells aren't growing. They're not creating new nerve cells. So usually the food you eat is very important to the health of your body, because your body makes new cells out of what you eat. You are what you eat. But because your body isn't making new brain cells, it doesn't really matter. Now, obviously, alcohol can kill your brain cells. You don't want to kill your brain cells. That's really bad. But, you can't really feed your brain cells because you're not making more. But anyway, if you want to find supplements for your brain, just look up nootropics. Nootropics. That's basically the catch-all term for supplements that have proven mental benefits. And that's all I can tell you. As far as oxygen, look, your body, your lungs use oxygen. So, pure oxygen is going to give you, I guess, good stuff for your body. You're going to get, because your body needs the oxygen. Your body doesn't, like, most air is nitrogen. Your body doesn't need the nitrogen. You just breathe it out, breathe it in. It's whatever. But oxygen is what your body actually needs. So, obviously, more concentrated oxygen can have benefits, because maybe your body doesn't work as hard and so it can do other things. I haven't looked into it, so I can't really speak too much on it. I can only speculate. But it's definitely not the secret to immortality.
"20th Century Rebellion Man donated $5. So here I was thinking New York would actually jail Trump. What a complete waste of tax dollars. The fuck does unconditional discharge mean? Just say unpunished. I'm sick of the fucking word game salad. I swear if I could make laws or undo things, it'd be the left changing word definitions. I'd change them back to their OG statements. Fuck Disney. Screw woke game developers, to hell with the healthcare system. And put to death all communist people and ideology."
But the problem is, communism is just it's an expression of the weak's desire for, resources. So if you kill all the communists and everyone with the ideology, you're going to kill basically everyone who's weak. And I don't mean just physically weak. I mean politically weak. Women, minorities, people with disabilities, anyone who's not normal, who doesn't feel like they're in the dominant position, is going to find communism appealing. It's not even if Karl Marx was never born, we'd still have communism. It may not be called Marxism, it'd be called something else, but it'd be the same, because it's just part of human nature. People will always seek out their self-interest, and so people who are weak will seek out an ideology which benefits the weak. It's that simple. And as far as what this was about, being able to say that Trump is a convicted felon. That's it. They wanted the soundbite that Trump is a convicted felon because he when he was being extorted money by a porn star, he lied on his loan application about what the money was for, because he had to pay a porn star's extortion money, and that's a felony. I mean, anyone else would do the same thing. If a porn star is extorting money from you, you're not going to put that on the paperwork that, hey, I need to take this loan out on this real estate so I can pay my porn star extortion. So it's like, it's retarded. The whole thing's retarded. And the fact that, you know, they were ginning up all these bullshit trials against Trump while Biden was covering up and pardoning all of his buddies for all their illegal shit just shows you how fucked the legal system is. But anyway, whatever. It doesn't matter. They have their soundbite. Who gives a shit?
Sebastian De La O donated $6. On a somber note, this week anti-perv, anti-H rights activist Anita Bryant died at 84 years of age. Bryant was active in the late 1970s. The gays boycotted Florida orange juice because she was the spokeslady for it. I wish they had boycotted Mexican beer.
So she's like a straight activist? So, whatever. Like, I mean, again, this is kind of the Jimmy Carter thing. You never heard of this chick until she died, and probably someone wrote an article about it, and that's the only reason why you know about her. So it's like, this happens all the time. You know, people, when people die, you have like that last, that, oh, so this person died, and this person was so great, and this person did this, but you're only hearing about them because they're dead. And again, if you're confused about why we give a shit about Jimmy Carter, wasn't he an awful president? Yes, he was an awful president. But he died, so we have to say something nice about him.
Avericks donated $5. Long Shark just stated that carbon dioxide is better for you than oxygen. What the hell? Lol. Wonder how Pa... Patine would interact with Slanch and or the other warp slash chaos gods. Yay, I'm not gonna take this too seriously, lol. Just why do people have such a hard on for certain fandoms and stuff? Like Star Wars theory and stuff, sih. It's like people just want to belong to a community and bandwagon on the husk of dead corpses.
Yeah, anyone saying that carbon dioxide is good for you is a fucking idiot. The reason why we exhale carbon dioxide is because we're expelling waste. Like, if you hold your breath, you will poison yourself from the carbon dioxide. Because that's why you're exhaling it. You're removing the carbon dioxide from your body because it's poisonous to you. So whoever that fucking guy is, he's a dumbass. As far as the Sith and Slaanesh, again, based on the George Lucas version of Sith philosophy, it's all about, you know, giving into your anger and your hate making you powerful, which Slaanesh should be all about. Slaanesh is all about that shit. So yeah, the Lucas, say, I guess the Lucas version of the Sith philosophy would be a lot more like Slaanesh rather than Nietzsche, which is how the expanded universe Sith philosophy was developed. So it's interesting, but yeah, it's not meant to be taken seriously. Now, so why do fandoms exist? You literally answered your own question. You said it's like people just want to belong to a community and bandwagon on the husk of dead corpses. You got it. They want to belong to a community. That's it. You found it out. People love turning things into a community. They love it. And it's because humans are social creatures. Plus, you know, people like belonging to things. People like having groups that they belong to. So, you know, you have the people you work with, you have the people you go to church with, you have the people, you know, you're related to. These are all different groups. So it just makes sense that whatever you do, you want to form it into a group. So, hey, do you like a video game? You like Street Fighter? You like whatever video game you're into? Oh, there's a community about that. There's a community about these games. So now you can not just play the game and enjoy the game. Now you can interact with the community. And so everything has a community. Everything. And it's human nature for people to form communities. Now, the problem is, and this is true of everything, by the way, whether you're a Star Wars geek or whether you're a furry or you're into CrossFit or you're into Linux... I know, I'm looking at you. You know who you are. Here's the thing. Do not make that your entire personality. It doesn't matter what it is. And people do this all the time. Like people who are workaholics, they make their work community the end-all be-all of their personality. They, or people who go to church, maybe they make their church community the end-all be-all of their whole personality. You know, that's almost acceptable because you spend a lot of time at work and church is important, right? The problem is when people don't go to church or don't go to work, they form these like fandom communities into the end all be all of their personality. So if they're a furry, you know, you could masturbate to cartoon anthropomorphic animals, whatever. But no, they need to make this the whole, that's their whole personality is they're a furry. And they only, they're part of the furry community and everything's about being a furry. And that's their whole personality. Or the fact that they use Linux is their whole personality. And they talk about Linux with all the other people in the Linux community. Or they do CrossFit and they talk about CrossFit. Or fucking vegans. The goddamn vegans. Everything's about being a vegan. Vegan, 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 vegan. And there's vegan this and vegan that. That's annoying as shit. So, but that's, I think people just need more things. People like, they focus on one thing and they, and look, maybe they find a good community and they make some friends and they feel like, hey, these are my people. Cool. But like, don't stop there. Don't just have this community be your whole personality. Like, venture out. Go mingle. You know, like, you have your family, you have your coworkers, you have people, you know, you can have more than one group. You don't need to just be one group all the time. And this is who you are. So whatever you're into, don't just be into that. Be into other things. And when you belong to lots of communities, you'll realize that they're not that big of a deal. But when you belong to one community, it becomes the end-all be-all of your personality. And you become really, like, invested in that community, and that becomes unhealthy. So I think people just, they kind of give up too easily and they just kind of settle for one community, and then it goes bad and then they get all butthurt. So that's where these Star Wars geeks, these, you know, whatever fandom you could think of, those people, they need to just get out more and like experience other communities and things to enjoy in life besides this one thing. That would do them a world of good.
Sam the man donated $5. Don't know if you saw Sam Hyde, he pretty much hit the nail on the head. Even if there is a civil war and hyperinflation or whatever, I don't see America stopping the millions of people coming here every year. White people will become a minority if they aren't already, and you'll basically see the country turn into South Africa. You might have communities like the Amish and what we can build, but I don't know, man. I guess we'll have our communities, but not a country.
Okay, so here's what you're missing. All right, in the early, you know, 1817 and 1800s into the 1900s, we had open borders. Open borders. Anyone could come to America and become an American. You just had to swear an oath and get registered, and you were an American. And we had people coming to America, mostly who were fleeing religious persecution or famine or whatever. But what would happen would be they would show up, they wouldn't make it, and then they go home. What changed was the welfare state. The welfare state, basically, if you didn't make it, you just go on welfare. And once you have a welfare state, you can't have open borders anymore. Otherwise, you just basically import all the world's poor, which is basically what we're doing. But the thing is, if you have hyperinflation and civil war and whatever, I guarantee you the welfare state goes away. That's the first thing that goes. That's the whole problem, is the welfare state. Once the welfare state goes away, you're going to have certain immigrants who actually see America as their home and have like more or less assimilated to American culture and way of life. They'll stick around. They'll help out. You know, this is their country now. This is their home. But, you know, all these hyphenated Americans, they'll just leave. They'll just go back home. Because they're not really Americans, and they never were. Because without the welfare, they're, and especially if you have hyperinflation and war, like, yeah, they will flee so quickly to get the fuck out of there. And here's the thing, like, and I've said this to people who are like, you know, who are immigrants, and maybe they've lived in America their whole life, but they have a country that they can go back to, and they know it. So if things get too rough in America, they'll just go back to their home country. Even if they weren't even born there, they have family there, and they'd be like, oh man, America's getting pretty shitty. I might have to come back to, you know, insert country. And then you call up your cousin or your uncle, like, hey, you know, America's really getting rough. Can I live with you back in whatever country? And they'll be like, yeah, sure. And because that's your home. That's where you, that's your people. Now, what if you're American? You don't have any other country you can flee to. This is your home. Well, then you're stuck. And who does that apply to? Which demographic has nowhere else to go because this is the only home they have? Basically, the people who've been here the whole time. Basically, white people and black people. Black people have nowhere to go because they don't even know what part of Africa they're from. And white people don't have anywhere to go because the only other place to go is Europe, and it's the same fucking flavor of shit. Europe and America are all going down for at the same time for the same reasons. So it wouldn't make sense to flee to Europe. That's like out of the frying pan and into an equally shitty frying pan. So I think everything's going to be fine. I think most immigrants will self-deport when things get bad. And, you know, whatever. Like, they really won't care. They weren't even here. They were only here for the jobs and the welfare. And when you take those away, they'll just leave. Not a big deal. They'll riot on the way out, but, you know, they were going to do that anyway.
Zize Z donated $5. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I still don't understand the reason the regime hates Europe so much historically. It was mentioned that they are envious or something, but they've been calling the shots the past 70-ish years. What's to envy?
Yeah, it's basically, well, it's the Jews. There really is no other word. Like, the regime, it operates out of Europe, but, like, the hatred, the intentional destruction of European societies is basically just Jewish hatred for the West. And the thing is, you know, modern Jews are mostly European. Like, the Jews you see in Israel are like one-third Semitic and two-thirds basically European white. So, like, they were fully, I mean, genetically anyway, they were European. But, like, they've constantly always been a minority. And Jews have been in Europe the whole time. And they've always been a minority. And they've always been, you know, kicked out of 109 countries and shit like that. Like, they have an axe to grind. They have an axe to grind against Europe. And even though they're like two-thirds European, they don't see themselves as European. They see themselves as like an oppressed minority and that with a huge axe to grind against Europe. But the fact that they're two-thirds European means there was a very valiant attempt to assimilate them genetically, and it just didn't stick, I guess. And so, you know, now they're just really mad. But that's basically it. I mean, because look, America, we went to war with Great Britain, and now we're like, we're buddies with the UK. We don't like, even, we literally went to war. Like, we rebelled against the king and beat the British army in a war for our independence. And we literally buried the hatchet, and we're like totally fine with the UK now. And the UK is fine with us. We tease each other a little bit, but, you know, British people and Americans get along fine. There is no, like, seething hatred for the British because of what happened a couple hundred years ago. But the hatred of, you know, basically Western Christendom will never be forgiven or forgotten. And, yeah, that's kind of what it's all... I really wish it was more complicated than that, but it isn't. It really is that simple. That, you know, it is what it is. Sorry. As far as like why the regime, the like America is going to fuck Europe, it's just because America has to cannibalize Europe to save itself. So someone's got to take one for the team, because the regime is running on borrowed money, and someone's got to buy their useless bonds and go bankrupt. It's like imagine you own Bitcoin, right? Well, it's going to crash eventually. You got to sell it to someone, but whoever you sell it to, it's just going to crash for them instead of you. But you got to sell it to someone, otherwise it's going to crash for you, and you don't want it to crash for you. You want to turn it into some real money before it crashes. That's basically it. The regime has to sell their bonds to someone, otherwise they're going to go bankrupt. So they basically are making their European vassals buy the bonds to save themselves. Now, why America? Why not sacrifice America for Europe? Why sacrifice Europe for America? It's like possession is 9/10 of the law. America is the global hegemon, so that's why Europe has to go. If the shoe was under their foot, if like the British Empire was still going strong and America was fairly weak, then they would sacrifice America to save the British Empire. Basically, America just happens to be the country that's the strongest out of all the Western powers. And so they're sacrificing the weaker ones to keep America on top, because America is trying to stop BRICS from ascending past it. So it's not really hatred. Like, America isn't destroying Europe out of hatred. It's destroying it to cannibalize it for itself. It's like a vampire feeding on its own spawn because it needs blood. Maybe the vampire hunter's really fucked it up and it's losing a lot of blood. It needs to feed. So it feeds on its own followers because it needs blood. And that's what they're doing. It's not because they hate them. They need to feed on someone. But the Jews hate Europe because of all the in Warhammer, they have like the dwarves, which are basically like Jews. Fantasy Jews, or dwarves are fantasy Jews, in case you didn't know. And in Warhammer, they have the Book of Grudges. The dwarves just bear grudges forever. And they have a book where they write down all the grudges they have against all their enemies. And, you know, that's like kind of a thing in the real world. There's a book of grudges for all the things white people did to Jews over the thousands of years. Not the least of which, like, you know, starting with Rome, or probably actually before that. You know, you had the Greeks. In fact, that's what a Hanukkah is. Hanukkah was when the Jews rebelled against the Greeks. And then the Romans fucked their shit up. So, yeah, they have a long, long axe to grind.
Avrix donated $5. TFM finale question of the night would be, what are your thoughts on Lex Luthor and why does he hate Superman? It never made sense to me to hate someone cause he's bold. Anyway, wouldn't Luthor serve better as a Batman villain? So TFM, can you explain how the Tao Te Ching or any Buddhist philosophy can express or progress Nietzschean thoughts and the will to power, or do they not really fit together? Also, what is willpower?
Oh my goodness. All right. I mean, you're really squeezing every fucking penny out of those $5 questions. All right. So Lex Luthor was originally just Luthor. Back in the early comics in the 30s and whatever, he was a mad scientist. He wasn't even a businessman. He was reinvented as a businessman, I think, in like the 80s or something. But he was originally just a mad scientist. So he would invent, you know, lasers, or he would, you know, shoot giant lasers at Superman. And that was it. He's basically a mad scientist. Superman, like, the idea of comic book characters having recurring villains was kind of new. And Luthor was just Mr. Mad Scientist Man, which was very popular at the time. So his kind of thing, the reason why he's a Superman villain, is because he's just a normal guy. That's the point. He doesn't have any... He's basically a mad scientist fighting with technology. It's like a Eggman, Robotnik, and Sonic. He's not fast. He's just like a genius inventor who's got some weird kink about animal-powered robots. But, you know, he's fighting... He's the villain of Sonic. And he's just a guy. He just makes robots. You know? You could give a superhero supervillains who also have powers, But sometimes it's interesting to be like, you know, he's just a guy who uses technology, and that's his, he's not really, doesn't have a power. Yeah, and like Batman is kind of like that. You know, he's just a guy who uses technology. But yeah, that's basically it. If anything, I would say Lex Luthor is kind of like Iron Man, because Iron Man was originally Marvel's take on Batman, where, like, because, you know, Bruce Wayne is like a billionaire who fights crime. Well, what would that realistically look like? Realistically, if a billionaire was going to fight crime, he wouldn't dress as a bat and throw boomerangs at kids. You know, he would wear like a high-tech suit of armor because he's a billionaire. And he wouldn't just, it wouldn't be a secret. He would like use the fact that he's a superhero to advertise his business, because that's what businessmen do. So Iron Man is like Marvel's version of Batman. So, but Lex Luthor is like DC's version of Iron Man as a villain, which happens all the time. Like Doomsday is DC's version of the Hulk. Like they wanted a Hulk versus Superman fight, so they created Doomsday to be like the, you know, DC's evil Hulk character. And so Lex Luthor is like DC's evil Iron Man. There's a lot of that in the comic book world. But anyway, there you go. Okay, so regarding your second question, let me get my, I got a thing. Let me get my thing. There we go. Okay. And there we go. All right. So, how does Nietzsche, the Tao Te Ching, Buddhist philosophy, how does it express, you know, blah, 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 blah. All right, so here is my Venn diagram of my philosophy. So you have Taoism, Stoicism, Existentialism, which is basically Nietzsche in philosophy, and then you have Platonism. And where they bleed over is you have Taoism is live in harmony with the Tao, which is what is nature. Platonism is live in harmony with justice and virtue. Existentialism is live in harmony with your own values and will. And Stoicism is live in harmony with logic and wisdom. And then where they bleed in, you know, you have Taoism and Stoicism have in common that you can only control yourself, go with the flow. Platonism and Taoism have the I know that I know nothing, those that know don't speak. Platonism and Existentialism have in common we do what we perceive is in our self-interest and benefit. And Existentialism and Stoicism have amor fati, love your fate, accept the bad with the good. And then you have like the further, you know, kind of where things bleed together, where you have objective outcomes, skepticism, fallibilism, and guide to action. In the middle of all of that is science. Basically, you know, experimentation, living in reality, finding out what's true. That's what science is all about. So this is how it all fits together. We got your Platonist philosophy, you got your Nietzsche, you got your Eastern philosophy, you got your Stoicism, and you got your science in the middle with your Jell-O pudding. That's my Bill Cosby impression. All right. I think that's it. Oh, what is willpower? What is willpower? It's self-discipline, for lack of, basically, these are concepts. I can't point to willpower. It doesn't physically exist, but it's basically your ability to discipline yourself. All right.
Zize Z donated $10. Why couldn't the regime rule like older empires did, where it benefits the citizens? How did we go from fighting commies to being ruled by commies before the USSR fell? Where were the people who saw the writing on the wall? What did they have better to do than to fight it for their kids? Go fishing.
Okay, so again, I think Israel is kind of the linchpin here, because before the creation of Israel, you obviously had powerful, influential Jews throughout Western civilization. You had like the Rothschilds and all that shit, right? But they were British, you know? They were citizens of the countries that they lived in, and they saw themselves as citizens of that country. So if you were a German Jewish family, you were German. You were a German who happened to be Jewish, but you were no less German. So when it, you know, like Halsey was talking about how his, you know, his grandparents who fled Nazi Germany, you know, his grandpa fought in World War One for the Germans and got like medals. He was like a war hero. But then by World War II, he was an enemy and he had to flee for his life with his family, even though he always saw, you know, him and his family always saw themselves as German. They didn't understand why this was happening because they were just Germans who just happened to be Jewish. Now, that was the way of the world for thousands of years. You know, you're always going to have an ethnic minority in the ruling class. And Jews, I mean, whatever, as long as they saw themselves as, this is our country, this is our home, and we have to take care of it. We have to be good stewards of this country because this is all we have. But then Israel was created. The first and only Jewish country, you know, made for the Jews. Now you have people who are, you know, in the ruling class of country X, Y, and Z who care more about Israel than their own country. And that's a bad combination. Because now you have people who are running the... It's fine to have people who, like, are loyal to other countries as long as they're not in power. Because when you have people in power who are serving the interests of foreign nations to the detriment of their own country and citizens, those people have to fucking go. Like, they need to be shown the door real quick. But they've been entrenched for so long, they're impossible to remove. And they control both parties, and everybody has to kiss their ass if you want any kind of political career. But the thing is they are purposefully hurting the country that they're ruling over in order to benefit Israel. They're putting the welfare of Israel over the welfare of their own country, even though they're the ruling class of this country. And this is almost unprecedented in human history. I mean, imagine, you know, think about like the ancient, you know, European kingdoms. A lot of these kingdoms were, you know, like maybe they were descended from some... you know, like you had like different brothers and cousins becoming rulers of different kingdoms where all the ruling classes were all related to each other, but they still fought each other. You know, like the king of France and the king of Belgium and the king of England, the king of Germany could have been cousins. I think they even were cousins during some of these wars, and they still went to war with each other, even though they were fucking cousins. Because they were Germans, they were English, they were French, they were whatever. That's how they saw themselves, even though they were related to each other. Now imagine the kings of ancient, you know, Middle Ages Europe, who were all related to each other anyway. They all belong to a certain ethnic group. And the ethnic group has a homeland, and it's a different country. And so all the nobles of these different countries are actually only serving the interests of this other country because they feel like that's their home, even though they're the kings of these other countries. They're acting in the interests of this foreign country instead of their own country. Now, you know, that could theoretically happen, but how quickly would those rulers be overthrown by their people? When it's very clear that these kings are serving this other country at the expense of their country that they're supposed to be the rulers of. Like, they would definitely rule the divine right or the mandate of heaven or whatever you want to call it pretty goddamn quick. And that's basically what we're dealing with. So, you know, if Israel didn't exist, even though the Jews would still be very rich and influential, they might actually see whatever country they live in as their country. And they would probably think, like, well, this is my home. I should probably do what's in the best interest of this country to keep it healthy because I plan on living here and raising my kids here. But if they're like, well, fuck this country, I'll just go to Israel. You know, fuck it. I'll just fleece this country blind and steal everything and then head off to Israel because what do I give a shit? This isn't my country. These aren't my people. Fuck them. And that's, you know, mistakes were made. That's all I'm saying.
Roof Korean donated $5. Some of the best prime rib I've ever had was made by a friend's dad who was a retired chef. He baked the prime rib entirely sealed in a kosher salt crust. Not only does the salt intensify the flavor, it traps the meat juices, making for an incredibly tender and flavorful prime rib.
Yeah, so When I first tried this thing, you know, I put the little meat tenderizer holes in it, and I rubbed the coarse salt on it. The first steak I had was a little bit salty because I don't think the salt had fully absorbed into the meat. But by day two, when the salt had been fully absorbed, yeah, you're exactly right. It seals in the juices, and I don't know, like, you say it intensifies the flavor. I don't know. It definitely works. I mean, like, try it. Like, get a cheap cut of meat. Like, get the cow butt cheek if you can. It's $2.50 a pound. Crazy cheap. And, you know, get a meat tenderizer. Now, they have, like, the hammers. This isn't the hammer. This is the thing with the needles in it. They come in, like, a round thing that you stamp. Or the one I have is, like, a rectangle that you stamp. But you basically stamp these holes in the steak. And then you just cover it in. You don't cover it, like, completely. Just take, like, you know, a little pinch of coarse salt and just rub it on the meat. So that it's, like, or sprinkle it on the meat. You know, you just want it to be on the meat. And then let it soak for like a day. If you eat it too soon, it'll be salty. Let the salt soak into the meat, fully absorb into the meat, and then grill it. And it's so fucking good. We're talking cheap cut. The cheapest cuts of meat I could find taste like a steakhouse. Because that's the thing. I'm not used to eating cheap cuts, because I usually, when I have steak, I have steak. And the thing is, the reason why steak is so expensive is because it's marbled. What I mean by marbled is you have a mix of meat and fat kind of together, almost like a swirl. And that makes it very easy to cut and easy to chew, because the meat might be tough, but the fat is soft. And this mix of meat and fat, it kind of melts in your mouth. That's why people pay so much for steak. But by putting in the tenderizer holes and putting the salt in, you soften up the meat. You break up the fibers. And it makes the meat feel and taste like a very expensive steak. Without having... The butt cheek meat does have some marbling. It's not completely just tough meat. But yeah, I'm very impressed. Just, you know, it definitely worth... Like, if you eat steak or if you, you know, whatever, get a little meat tenderizer thing to put holes in it. Put some coarse salt on it. And thank me later. It's so good. But and I did have prime rib for Christmas, so I treated myself for Christmas and had, because I, you know, I started the whole carnivore thing before Christmas, but for Christmas I had some prime rib, because it's, you know, it's beef. I'm pretty sure that isn't, you know, it's still technically beef. It's still like technically a steak. But yeah, prime rib is delicious. It's very expensive though, but you know, sometimes you got to treat yourself.
RMNDR donated $5. Public service announcement. We can switch from calling women garden tools to calling them household objects on Meta. We can also call trainees it. Surely that's not gonna be recorded on the internet forever and used against us in the future, right? Right?
I wouldn't. Here's the thing. I've been hearing a lot of people saying that, like, Zuck is, you know, being a chameleon. So he was all about censorship and all that stuff. But now that Trump is going to be president, he's all about, he's all about freedom of speech and whatever. And what this shows is it just shows you that these so-called tech oligarchs who run these social media platforms, they're not the puppet master. There are people like, oh yeah, we need to crack down on these oligarchs. They're up, you know, controlling our democracy. And no, these tech companies do what the government, you know, they dance to the government's tune, because they know that the government can shut them down and fuck up their bottom line very easily. So they cooperate with the government. So when the left was dominating the politics, you know, they let the FBI in to censor people. They were all about fact-checking to benefit Biden. And, you know, he did what he had to do because the Democrats were in power and he didn't want them to fuck with his business. But now that Trump's going to be president, now it's time to, you know, celebrate free speech. So, yeah, is Zuck a chameleon that basically switches, you know, colors whenever a new president is elected? Yeah. But it also, this shows that these tech companies... they are doing what the government tells them to do. They're dancing to the tune the government is playing. The government is the problem. It's not these tech companies. It's not any of these companies. These companies are just doing business. They're, you know, they got to do what the government says. The government is, it shouldn't surprise you that the government is the one initiating force and coercion and not the corporations that have no standing army. That should be common sense. But a lot of people truly believe that the corporations have corrupted the government and not the other way around. But all the evidence proves otherwise. The corporations just want to make money. Now, they will, here's the problem. When you solicit donations from corporations, they do kind of expect a return on their investment. So if they donate millions of dollars to you, they might want a favor or two. But they only donate donations to you because you make them. And if you doubt me, Microsoft, back in the 90s, they weren't donating any money to Washington. They spent no money on lobbying. And you have politicians saying that Bill Gates was being greedy, because Microsoft was the biggest corporation at the time, and they weren't lobbying them. They felt entitled. Like, they feel entitled to be lobbied by big corporations, even though they don't need anything. So what happened was, there was a monopoly lawsuit against Microsoft for their web browser. And so after that, they started lobbying Congress just because they didn't want to deal with it. I mean, since then, Bill Gates has become a giant piece of shit. But in the 90s and early 2000s, when he was dealing with this witch hunt, I had a lot of sympathy for him. But, you know, it just goes to show, you either die a hero or you live long enough to become the villain. But yeah, it's the government is corrupting everything. It's not the fucking corporations. Unless you truly think that, like, Nancy Pelosi is the greatest stock market trader of all time.
Sebastian De La O donated $5. Reassimilation, if indeed people should mix together, then get on with it. Lay all mix together and boycott Mexican beer.
Well, so the thing is racial assimilation is unnecessary and doesn't solve anything. As Jews show, you know, modern Jews are like 2/3 European. And yet they consider themselves to be not white and actively hate white people, even though they're 2/3 white. So fucking riddle me that, Batman. So racial assimilation doesn't solve anything. You need cultural assimilation. You know, you need to be like Caesar from New Vegas. You need to obliterate their culture and force them to adopt your culture. That's what assimilation means. So if you immigrate and you want to be American, that means you're no longer whatever you were. You're now an American. You speak American, you act American, you are American. This hyphenated American shit, that's the problem. You don't necessarily need like racial unity or racial everyone fucking each other and all everyone's a little bit of brown, a little bit of everything. That will happen to some extent. But look at the Roman Empire. The Romans had, they didn't have like racial mixing shit, like, but they made you Roman. So when they went to the Middle East, they made everyone Roman. You spoke Latin, you did all the Roman shit. And but like the Roman legions pulled from different parts of Europe looked nothing like each other. But they all spoke Latin, they all dressed the same, they all used the same battle tactics. But you had legions from different parts of the world that were racially homogenous among themselves, who looked nothing like other Romans from other parts of the empire. So you had a multi-ethnic monoculture, where the Romans would enslave you and assimilate you into Roman culture, and then turn you loose to go back to be whatever, but you were Roman. So yeah, multiculturalism is death. But you don't necessarily need to, like, have everybody fucking everybody. That doesn't solve anything. Mixing everyone up into, you know, some kind of weird kind of, you know, racial soup doesn't actually solve anything. You have to get rid of the multiculturalism. Multiculturalism is what destroys civilizations. You can have multi-ethnic, you can have different ethnicities as long as everybody's assimilated and they're all speaking the same language and have the same culture. That works. What doesn't work is because what you have is, you know, everybody has different cultures, different languages, different histories. Then you have animosity. People have us versus them. But when everyone's the same culture, there's no them. Everybody's us. Now, and you might, like, you know, you're going to look different if you're from a different race. But, like, and you might notice people don't give a shit. Like, maybe people won't date you because you're black. But they won't, you know, maybe they're not into black people. Whatever, you know, it's an acquired taste, like coffee. But, like, they won't treat you as non-American. They know you're American. It's just, you know, and the same thing in Britain. Like, black British people are just black British people. They don't look at them as some kind of other because they've assimilated. They speak English. They speak with British accents and everything. Like, straight out of Harry Potter. So, I mean, so the answer isn't race mixing. The answer is we have to have assimilation in a monoculture. And that's what, like, all this multiculturalism, diversity shit, that's what's doing it. Because even if you import a bunch of white people from all over the world, if we all have different cultures, who fucking cares? What difference is it going to make? Now, look at Canada. You have, like, Quebec. They all speak French. And they, like, hate other Canadians. Other Canadians hate them. They're the same fucking race. But because this group speaks French and this group doesn't, they fucking hate each other. I rest my case. The answer is, you know, you have to have cultural assimilation. The racial assimilation will kind of happen on its own because, you know, people will fall in love with each other. You know, again, someone might be into black people and, like, hey, I want to, let's make some mixed race babies. You know, some people are into that sort of thing. Some people aren't, you know, whatever. All right. Last one.
Schmidted donated $5. Hey TFM, really happy you gave carnivore a go. Don't think you remember, but I recommended it and Dr. Ken D. Berry a couple of years ago.
Well, so, I mean, again, I only got rheumatoid arthritis last June. I've only had it for, you know, 6 months and some change. So, like, carnivore is, you know, again, it's like keto, but without the fiber. You're just avoiding carbs entirely by just eating steak. But having done keto for so many years, there is something about red meat that's different. Because normally I eat a lot of pork, and I get sick of pork and eggs, and I crave carbs, and I need a cheat day. And that's not happening with steak. I'm not craving other foods. I'm fine eating steak. So there's something about that I can't fully explain. But I don't even have any cravings for other food, which is weird. Because every time I've done keto, usually a couple weeks in, I'm like, fuck, I'm sick of eating bacon all the time. I'm sick of eating, you know, eggs and bacon and this shit every day. It's really old. I don't feel that way about the steak. And the fact that, now here's the thing about the rheumatoid arthritis stuff. I'm still taking my medicine. I'm still taking my enzymes. I'm still taking my, you know, stuff. So I can't 100% say it's the carnivore diet. In fact, one day I didn't take my enzymes just as an experiment. And I did start to feel the arthritis come back. So I think it's a combination. I think it's like a throw everything against the wall. I think it's a combination of the medicine, the enzymes, the carnivore, but it is a combination because, you know, the carnivore is making an impact. It is making a difference. So I haven't had any flare-ups in a couple weeks, and my shoulders are starting to feel better for the first time pretty much since June. So, like, I'm starting to actually see the light at the end of the tunnel where my body works again, and I can start working out again. I haven't worked out since June because I can't lift things, like my hands weren't working. I couldn't even do cardio because my knees weren't working. But because of carnivore, I've already lost all the weight. So they put me on prednisone, which is a steroid, not the anabolic kind. It's like an anti-inflammatory steroid, but it's a very powerful one, and it makes you gain weight. So being on prednisone and not being able to work out, I've put on like 15 or so pounds, and you know, I tried losing it, and every time I had a flare, I'd start to lose it, but then I'd have a flare up and I have to take the prednisone again, and then I put on more weight. And it was getting very upsetting because I worked really hard to lose weight and then I gained it all back. But starting carnivore, I've been on it since the 23rd of December. So I still got, like, you know, 2 weeks to go, or a week and some change to go. I lost all the weight from the prednisone in the first 2 weeks. So I lost all the weight. And then this last week, I lost an additional 3 pounds. So I'm actually, I've lost additional weight from before the arthritis even happened. And I'm actually below my military weight. So my military weight fluctuates. There's like a 30-pound kind of range when it came to my military weight. If I can continue to lose weight, I might get down to like the best shape of my life. Like when I was in the military, in the best shape of my life, I was slightly under 200. So I'm getting down there. So but I got to lose like another, I regret even throwing numbers out. I don't like to throw numbers out because I don't want this to become a dick measuring contest. If you start throwing out numbers, people start, you know, it becomes a dick measuring contest. But based on this carnivore shit, I could get down to like the best shape of my life. Back when I had like washboard abs and shit, back when I was in the military, which that would be crazy. And like, I look young for my age, despite, and in fact, when I wasn't sleeping because of the rheumatoid arthritis, because no position was comfortable because my shoulders hurt, I looked like shit. I looked like an old man because I hadn't slept in days. But now I'm sleeping really well. My insomnia hasn't gone away, but I'm sleeping more soundly, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not tossing and turning and, you know, waking up and going back to bed in fits and starts. I'm more sleeping through the night and feeling pretty good about that. My appetite's also gotten better. Like, normally I only eat 2 meals a day. I'm now starting to actually feel hungry, and I'm eating 3 meals a day. But, you know, again, they're just like steaks. They're not like a full plate of food. But that's interesting. This other thing. Okay, so if anyone's done carnivore, this is kind of weird. It's something I noticed recently. This is going to be really weird. This might even be an overshare. So just brace yourself. This might be weird to admit this. I've noticed, like, when I use a toy, my manly discharge is like not as voluminous as before. Normally it's like a good healthy, you know, dose. It's like now it's like kind of a, and it's like thick. It's like a thick kind of, it's like hawking a loogie. Instead of, you know, like, normally it's like, you know, it's like a good old, you know, good size squirt. Now it's just like hawking a little slimy loogie. And I'm wondering, is that a carnivore thing? Does it turn your cum into snot and make it really thick and less voluminous? I don't know. That's just something I've noticed recently. My jizz has gone from a nice, healthy stream to like hawking a loogie out of my urethra. I don't know. Should I see a doctor? I feel fine. I feel great. I don't think that anything's wrong with me. My body, I feel great as far as my body's concerned. I just noticed, like, what is this fucking hawking a loogie shit? Because normally it's all runny and, you know, it's like milk, you know? Now it's like slime. I don't know. Anyone have any insight into that? I'm just curious. Maybe I'm not drinking enough water, or maybe I'm drinking too much. Well, I don't know. I'm concerned, but I feel good, so I don't know if I should be concerned. Do I have cancer? Is this what testicular cancer looks like? Does it make your fucking jizz look like snot? I don't know. Anyway, so that's it. It's been a journey. And I've learned to, you know, I've learned tricks to turn butt cheek meat into delicious steaks. And it's not as expensive as I thought. Like, if I had to spend $12 a pound on steak, yeah, that shit, I couldn't afford that shit. That's so expensive. But $2.50 a pound for butt cheeks and then turning those into steaks, yeah, I could do that. That's not expensive at all. And actually, I think I'm eating less food. I actually had to give away some of the food in my fridge because I just, you know, I'm not eating it. So my food budget isn't that bad. I'm spending about $50 every week and change in steak. So that's not, that's only $200 a month. My food budget before, I think, was like over $350 or something like that. So I'm thinking I'm spending less on food. I mean, that's just on steak. I think, I don't know. I haven't actually tabulated what I'm spending on food. I might be spending less on food because I'm just eating these steaks and I'm not eating, you know, other stuff. Cause before I was eating like protein bars and stuff like that. But now I'm not eating anything but steak. So, and protein bars are expensive. Not gonna lie. So, you know, yeah, maybe instead of eating like protein bars and protein shakes and all that whey shit, just fucking eat nothing but steak. Maybe that was the way all along. That was the true way. So anyway, so that's fine. But yeah, again, like I've with the arthritis, taking all that, like all that whey protein didn't really make a lot of sense because I couldn't work out because of the inflammation. So yeah, I'm actually excited to be able to start lifting weights again. I'm, you know, my muscles haven't atrophied, but I just feel like, you know, like you ever see like an old wrestler that's like, you could tell he used to be big, but now his muscles are all saggy and, you know, like, oh, used to be like, you know, used to be something. And now look at you. I don't look like that, but I feel like that. I feel like my body is wasting away and I'm turning into an old wrestler. So looking forward to my shoulders finally not hurting. And so I could finally start lifting weights again. So good. That'll be fun times anyway. So, okay. For this live stream, because my OBS crashed, and I still haven't found a good program to join two videos together. People have tried to send me some and I couldn't get them to work correctly. And if I try to run these, if I try to put both of these in my video editing software, it will have to process the entire video and that will take hours. So I'm probably just going to upload these as two separate videos. And I normally don't do that, but it is what it is. Anyway, so that's about it. So thank you everyone for donating and for watching and for supporting the sponsors. I hope you enjoyed some Go-Go Muffin footage. I was just playing that casual game just to have something in the background. And I don't know if that's what caused it to crash, because my OBS has never crashed before. At least I can't remember it crashing. And so I don't know, was it the gameplay causing the OBS to crash? Some type of RAM spike? I don't know. But yeah. It's just like a little auto-playing AFK MMORPG with, like, cutesy chibi art. So if you're into that, check out Go-Go Muffin. Hashtag not sponsored. But anyway, that's it. That's our show. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of your weekend. As far as predictions, we're still waiting for Trump to be president. Everything's kind of hanging in the balance. We're waiting to see what Trump actually does. We can speculate. We can war game it out, but we're not really going to know what Trump's going to do until he's actually president. So we'll just have to wait and see. Things will probably more or less coast along, more or less in the trajectory they're currently on, until Trump does something to mix things up or signals to BRICS or Iran that he's about to escalate things. That could cause something to happen, but it's all up to Trump. The weight of the entire world is on his fake tanned orange shoulders. So we must all just wait to see what the host of The Apprentice does with all of that power. So that's it. Anyway, so thank you to our sponsors, The Dollhouse, Love Nestle, MetWeb, Shedimer Comics, and Revy Innovations. Thank you guys for hanging out. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will see you on Wednesday. Take care.
From the dawn of time, mankind has looked up into the stars and asked a single question. Why can't I get some pussy spinning at 300 RPM? The future is now, and our Lord and Savior has answered our silent prayers. We have the world's first sex doll insertable spinning robot pussy. You can now bring your waifu to life to bring sex to regions unexplored. Go boldly where no man has gone before. Spinning robot pussy is the best pussy you'll ever have, and that's a fact. Does your meatbag girlfriend's pussy spin at 330 RPM? No. No, it doesn't. Go to spinningrobotpussy.com/TFM for a discount of up to $100 for a limited time. That's spinningrobotpussy.com/TFM. What are you waiting for? The future is now.
War. War never changes. In the current year, women have declared war on men. Men are not only guilty until proven innocent, but they are not even allowed to prove their innocence. In response to this warfare waged by women, known as feminism, men have sought refuge with waifus. Artificial women, able to satisfy a man's need for love and sex. Retailers like the Dollhouse began to spread, bringing waifus to men everywhere, freeing them from the enslavement of feminism. Get your waifu today from thedollhouse.com or dc.dollhouse.com if you're in the United States, before they're banned by feminism so they can control men once more. Go to thedollhouse.com to find your waifu today before it's too late.
Kick-ass new three-part dark fantasy comic by Shattermare Comics. We're very excited to bring you titles like Mercenary Guild and the new groundbreaking horror sci-fi graphic novel, Victor. For the email newsletter, please sign up at ShattermareComics.com and receive exclusives upon each launch. Then check out the latest issue of Hardly Heroes. Don't forget to grab the physical copy of Lucas the Mucus, written by the great TFM. Oh, and we have anime titties as well. Thanks again.